All right, strap in for this one, because today we're going to do a deep dive into Doe v. United States. A case that, well, it really threw a wrench into how courts handle a victim's past sexual history in rape trials. It's 1981, and we've got this, well, it's a relatively new rule on the books, Rule 412, meant to shield victims from having, well, their whole personal life dragged into the courtroom, right? But as with most things in law, there are exceptions.
Of course.
And that's where things get really messy.
Oh, yeah. Doe is fascinating. What's fascinating about Doe is that it's not just legal theory, right? We're talking about a real woman, Jane Doe, facing a real threat to her privacy.
Pop the hat.
She's the victim in a rape trial against Donald Black.
Right.
And the defense, they want to introduce evidence about her sexual history, claiming it, well, claiming it fits under one of Rule 412's exceptions.
This is where the judge makes a big misstep.
Ooh.
I mean, a blunder, really. He initially allows the evidence without even notifying Doe.
Wow.
That's a clear violation of Rule 412's procedures.
Yeah.
I mean, they're there for a reason. So they have a rehearing, but the judge still sides with the defense. So Doe does something, well, something pretty incredible. She tries to appeal the ruling before the trial even finishes.
Bold move. That's a bold move. And it raises a really critical question, right? Can a victim who isn't technically a party to the criminal case even appeal a pretrial ruling like this? I mean, the defense argued that she had absolutely no standing.
And this is where the Fourth Circuit Court comes in and does some serious legal judo. They use one called the collateral order doctrine. Think of it kind of like an emergency brake for crucial rights that can't wait until after a trial. It applies when an order settles an issue definitively, deals with a major right separate from the trial's main focus, and can't be effectively reviewed after the trial concludes. So the court argues brilliantly that waiting for a post-trial appeal would be pointless. Doe's privacy would already be violated, right? So the appeal would be meaningless. They basically said the point of Rule 412 is to prevent this kind of harm, not clean it up after the fact.
That's a good point.
And so by invoking the very intent of Congress when they crafted Rule 412, the court strengthens Doe's right to appeal and set a precedent for victims in similar situations.
They did.
So we've got this landmark ruling saying victims can appeal these kinds of decisions.
Right.
But back to Rule 412 itself. I mean, it's a shield, but it's not impenetrable.
All right.
There are those exceptions. And the Fourth Circuit outlines two key ones in this case.
So the first one is for evidence that's constitutionally required to protect the defendant. Imagine a scenario, right, where the defense claims consent, but there's evidence that directly contradicts that. That might be admissible, even if it, you know, delves into the victim's sexual history. It's a delicate balance, to say the
For
least.
sure. And the second exception gets even more specific: evidence of past sexual behavior, specifically between the victim and the accused, but only if it's relevant to consent. Let's say, for example, the defense argues that they had a prior sexual relationship, implying consent in this instance. That kind of evidence might be allowed. But the court draws a very clear line in the sand.
They do. And they rejected, in fact, the defense's attempt to bring in broader reputation or opinion evidence about Doe, stating that it wasn't relevant to consent or credibility. This wasn't a free-for-all. This decision helped define, you know, really define the boundaries of what kind of evidence is admissible under Rule 412.
So after this first round in Doe, we see a win for victims' rights and a clarification of Rule 412. But the story doesn't end there. Welcome back. We've been unpacking Doe v. United States. It's a case that really opened the doors for victims' rights in rape trials. Before Doe, imagine, right? A judge wrongly allows evidence about your sexual history, and you're just powerless until after the trial, you know, the damage is already done.
It's a chilling thought. I mean, Doe changed that by giving victims the right to appeal those kinds of evidentiary rulings before the trial even begins, right? That shift in power is huge
Huge.
Because the harm caused by, you know, exposing someone's past sexual history in this context, I mean, it's immediate and
Quiet.
often irreparable.
You can't unring that bell.
Right.
Put yourself in Jane Doe's shoes for a second. I mean,
Yeah.
you've survived this horrific experience, and now you're facing, well, you're facing the possibility of your most personal details just laid bare in court,
Right.
all because the defense is trying to, you know, manipulate the jury's perception of you.
Absolutely. And that's why Doe is such a landmark case, you know? It recognizes that these rulings aren't just about legal technicalities.
Yeah.
They have real human consequences, you know?
Right.
It's about dignity. It's about privacy. That's about acknowledging the unique vulnerabilities of victims in these cases.
But this case wasn't just about protecting victims, right? I mean, it sent a clear message to judges all across the country.
Yeah.
About how they should be handling Rule 412.
Right.
And those tricky exceptions.
Like a giant neon sign flashing, judges, proceed with caution. You know? In the Fourth Circuit's decision, it underscored that those exceptions to Rule 412, well, they're meant to be narrow.
Right.
Not loopholes for the defense to just exploit.
Right.
They emphasize that judges need to, like, scrutinize any attempt to introduce evidence of a victim's past sexual behavior, right? And make sure that it, like, truly fits within one of those exceptions.
That scrutiny is so important, you know?
Yeah.
Because without it, we risk sliding back into this, well, the system where victims are essentially punished for coming forward, right?
Right.
It makes you wonder, though, about this constant balancing act between the rights of the accused to the rights of the victim. So on the one hand, you have the defendant's Sixth Amendment right to a fair trial.
Okay.
Including, you know, the right to present a defense, right?
Of course.
But then on the other hand, you have, you know, the victim's right to privacy and dignity.
That tension is at the heart of so many legal issues, really.
Yeah.
And Doe didn't erase the rights of the accused, right?
Right.
It simply acknowledged that those rights, well, they aren't absolute.
Right.
They have to be weighed against the equally important rights of the victim, mm-hmm. right? Rule 412, at its core, is an attempt to, you know, strike that delicate balance.
It's like this constant tug of war, you know?
Yeah.
Trying to make sure that justice is served while protecting everyone involved.
Yeah. You know? Exactly. Doe provides, I think, crucial guidance for navigating that really complex terrain.
For sure.
You know, it reminds us that victims have a voice.
Yeah.
And that their rights deserve, I mean, they deserve fierce protection.
Absolutely.
But the impact of this case, I think, reaches even further. You know, it's influenced the way that lawyers approach these types of cases, too.
How so?
Well, for defense attorneys, right. Doe was a wake-up call, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, they can't just, like, throw any piece of a victim's sexual history at the jury and hope something sticks, right?
Mm.
They have to meet a much higher standard now.
Right.
They have to prove that the evidence is truly relevant
and
that it falls within, you know, one of those narrow exceptions to Rule 412. No more fishing expeditions.
And I imagine this case has also emboldened prosecutors to be more vigilant about protecting victims' rights, right?
Absolutely. Doe gave prosecutors a powerful weapon to, like, fight back against unfair attacks on victims, right?
Mm-hmm.
They can now confidently object
to,
you know, overly broad requests for evidence and cite Doe as precedent for excluding irrelevant or prejudicial information, right? It really leveled the playing field.
So Doe v. United States offered clarity for judges, lawyers, and, well, most importantly for victims, right? Welcome back to the deep dive. It's really amazing how Doe v. United States, a case from 1981, still echoes in courtrooms today.
Right.
I mean, it's not just some dusty legal relic.
Right.
But a decision that has really profoundly impacted how we think about, well, how we think about victims' rights in sexual assault cases.
Yeah, it's a testament to how, you know, a single case can spark real change, not only in legal precedent, right?
Right.
But also in societal attitudes, you know. Doe forced us to confront, like, the deeply ingrained biases and harmful myths that often, I think, surround these types of cases. You know, it exposed how the very system meant to protect victims could sometimes end up, well, re-victimizing them.
It's disheartening to think that was the reality for so many victims, you know, before Doe.
Yeah.
But we've come a long way since then, haven't we? I mean, there's greater awareness now about the trauma that victims experience.
Well, sure.
And thankfully, more resources to support them.
Certainly. Certainly there's been progress.
Yeah.
But let's be honest, right? I mean, the fact that we're still talking about Doe v. United States over 40 years later highlights, you know, it highlights how much work, I think, remains.
Yeah.
The fight for victims' rights is far from over.
So where do we go from here? How do we ensure continued progress, right?
Right.
I mean, it seems like Rule 412, while groundbreaking, might need some updating, you know? to keep up with the times?
That's a question a lot of legal experts are grappling with.
Yeah.
The world has changed so drastically since 1981.
Oh, absolutely.
Technology and social media have revolutionized how we interact, how we form relationships.
Right.
And, you know, even the concept of consent has evolved in right. the digital age. And so our legal system needs to adapt, really, to these new realities.
Exactly. I mean, think about it. How do we apply Rule 412
yeah.
to evidence from, you know,
right.
dating apps
yeah.
or social media? What about cases involving, like, online harassment or
yeah.
revenge porn?
Right.
These are all issues the original drafters of Rule 412 couldn't have possibly anticipated.
Right, right. It's a genuine challenge, I think.
Yeah.
You know, we need to find ways to, like, adapt Rule 412 without compromising the core protections it offers victims.
Right.
This isn't about erasing the rights of the accused. It's
yeah.
about recognizing that those rights aren't absolute,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
It's about ensuring fairness
yeah.
and justice for everyone involved.
Doe v. United States really opened our eyes
yeah.
to that delicate balance.
Yeah.
It's been a really incredible deep dive.
It has been.
And I hope it's, well, I hope it sparks some critical thinking for our listeners as well.
Me too.
We owe it to victims, you know, both past and present, to keep pushing for a system that truly protects their rights.
Yes.
And honors their dignity. Be sure to check out our show notes for links to the full case and further reading on this, well, this fascinating topic.
Yeah, great topic.
Thanks for joining us on the deep dive.